North Dakota lawmakers vote to crack down on schools who don't follow the bathroom rules. State leaders join a lawsuit against the state of New York, saying, keep us out of your climate agenda. And Donald Trump says it's time for our administration to hit the brakes on a $5 billion electric vehicle charging station program. Good afternoon, friends. Steve Holsham here on the Steve Holsham Show. It's been a very full day of stories as the new administration jumps in, gets going. The new legislature jumps in and gets going. And North Dakota Attorney General Drew Wrigley continues to do what he does, and that is join with other states and say what the federal government or other states have done just cannot be done. And it's got to stop somewhere. The fights are on all across our region. Hope it's been a good Friday for you here on this first Friday of the month of February. It feels a little decent on the weather side outside today. It was really cold and windy yesterday. Today, not too bad. And I see now that the snow has started to roll in. And I think I remember hearing Dean say something about that this morning when he was giving the forecast. So not a surprise that we are getting a little bit more snow here over the weekend. The warm temps, though, and it looks like it's going to be a while before those roll in. If you've got a comment or question for us, we'd love to hear from you today. You can call us on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line, 701-271-1100. They've recently expanded and can get you in fast. Make an appointment, get in this week at valleychristian.co. Coming to you live from the Steve Holsham studio, built on a solid foundation, thanks to our sponsor, Precision Concrete Cutters, Ram Jack North. Your home is your greatest asset. Protect it. Go to pccnd.com to learn more. Jobs numbers in the news today, and a lot of talk about the economy going on in different news organizations, different talk shows, different websites, social media platforms. There's a lot of really interesting stuff there, a lot of really interesting little news and nugget pieces. Not big stories, but stats and figures to make you go, huh, that's interesting. So we'll hit on a lot of those things today. We will visit with Raheem Williams, our friend who is an economist and researcher today, and we're going to talk about the Federal Reserve picture going forward in 2025. Will there be any rate cuts this year? Well, if you look at the jobs picture today, you could say there might be a reason for a rate cut that doesn't have anything to do with interest rates. So we'll get into that with him today. Target is in trouble. They are being accused of not telling the whole story about the impact of customer buyouts, or excuse me, boycotts, not buyouts, boycotts. So we'll talk about that today. I got a really good commentary, too, on birthright citizenship. We've talked about this issue a fair amount, and I saw a really good commentary today that broke this down, and I think this is really good. And I also, the best thing I heard all day was a conversation that happened on Fox Business this afternoon after a group of House Democrats went over to the Department of Education building and wanted in. But building security said, I'm sorry, we don't have you on the list. We can't let you in. We don't know who's in your group. And yeah, I believe you that you're a congresswoman, a congressman. I believe you that you are who you are, but we have rules and I cannot break them for you. And that got pretty interesting today. And it led to a good conversation that continues a chat that we had yesterday about the North Dakota Department of Education. And if you missed that conversation yesterday, I would encourage you to go back to the podcast that we have, the show archive, on our website, am1100theflag.com, because we had a really good conversation yesterday about how much would it really hurt North Dakota students and teachers, the two people that we really care about the most, if the Department of Education went away? And the message we heard was, well, they do some good things for us, but as long as they continue to send the funding our way that we need for the things we have, we don't really need the building much. So thought that was interesting. And we had the funding long before we had the building and the Department of Education. So if you want to hear that, you can check back on yesterday's show there. But we're going to continue that conversation today with the chat that happened with the Fox Business people. So lots of ground to cover here on the show this afternoon, on this Friday afternoon. Let's get to it here with the 4 o'clock wrap, semi-automatic storylines as we go rapid fire to catch you up on a busy day. Friday, February 7th, average high is 20. The average low is 1. Record high 51 in 1991. Record low minus 32 in 1893. Sunrise this morning was at 7:43, sunset at 5:40 p.m. We'll gain 2 minutes and 58 seconds of daylight. When we get back together on Monday, that number will increase to 3 minutes and 1 second of daylight that we'll gain on Monday. I left the station last night at about 20 past 6, got out of here, packed up my stuff, and headed out to the car, and I looked over in the western sky. It was a clear night. It was a beautiful night, and there was still a very, I want to say audible, but that's not the word, visible. That's what I'm looking for, a very visible glow in the western sky. And still a fair amount of light, so the days are getting longer, no doubt about that. In the markets today, it was a down day on Wall Street and a pretty significant sell-off today. The Dow was off 444 points, the S&P 500 was down 57, the NASDAQ down 268. Inflation concerns apparently spooked some traders, and we keep hearing tariff fears might be part of that as well, which never seemed to be as much as people fear that they are, but maybe it was a good week and people wanted to take some profits. Don't exactly know. But the market was down today pretty much across the board. WTI crude oil today, up 45 cents. It's been kind of on a downward trend, really, since the inauguration for the most part, but up 45 cents today to finish at 71.06. Gold today up $9 an ounce. Silver down 44 cents. Bitcoin today down $1,000 at $95,710. Bitcoin at its lowest point here. Let me click on the chart here. But Bitcoin's been on a bit of a tank here since, well, what do we get to? We got about 106. That was back January 15th or so. So the last week and a half, something like that. Today finishing about 95,000 or so. AAA says the average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas nationwide is $3.14, up a penny from yesterday. North Dakota's average price is $2.97, Minnesota $3.05, South Dakota $2.97. In the news today, WDAY Radio reports that Senators John Hoeven, Steve Daines from Montana, and a group of Republican colleagues have introduced a pair of bills to, quote, unleash American energy. These bills would require 4 annual onshore lease sales be held by the federal government in top oil and gas producing states, along with 2 annual offshore lease sales in the Gulf and 6 offshore lease sales over 10 years in Alaska's Cook Inlet. So the Gulf of America, they want to get some drilling going on there along with some other places as well. And as you know from listening to the Steve Hallstrom show and probably other shows on our station here, but the Biden administration, despite being legally obligated to offer lease auctions and hold lease auctions for rights to drill on federal lands, did not do that. And so the senators we're talking about are trying to get that kickstarted to get to a much higher level much faster. WDAY Radio News also today has a little bit more on that story Austin Erickson told us about yesterday. The city of Moorhead says the reason that its plan for a Romkey Park pool replacement has universal locker rooms is because the universal locker rooms are basically individual stalls with floor-to-ceiling walls and doors for changing rooms. So a lot of us were thinking, okay, what's going on here with this whole thing, a public locker room? But it's not really that way. It's a common area, but you walk into a room and shut the door behind you and nobody can see in. So that's the story going on there. The North Dakota House of Representatives today passed a bill that would punish public schools that defy state mandates barring transgender youth from using school bathrooms that align with their gender identity. These are the stories you got to say, okay, no, hold on now. What are they really getting at here? This is a forum story today. But basically, the state legislature wants to make sure that boys are using boys' bathrooms and girls are using girls' bathrooms. And they went to a vote on one of those bills today in the North Dakota state legislature. And it basically overwhelmingly got through. 73 to 18 was the vote count on this one. North Dakota Attorney General Drew Wrigley has joined 21 other states contending that a new law passed in the state of New York forcing a small group of major energy producers to pay $75 billion into a fund to cover climate change is unconstitutional. Of course, this is our friend Letitia James, the New York Attorney General, listed as a defendant there. And the law requires major fossil fuel companies to pay into a fund over the next 25 years based on their past gas emissions. Gas emissions used to be something you joked about and sounded funny with your buddies in the backseat of the car going out on a Friday night. But we're now talking about natural gas emissions there. So North Dakota and many other states saying, yeah, I know you can't do that. What you do to one affects the business that those oil companies would do in our states as well. Star Tribune reports today that the defamation lawsuit against Alpha News and our friend Liz Collin got its first day in court today. The lawsuit has been brought by Minneapolis Police Department Assistant Chief Katie Blackwell. And the hearing today started the proceedings, which will go a long way toward helping us understand the debate over the definition of protected speech as applies to journalists. The hearing was for a motion filed by attorney Chris Maydell to dismiss the lawsuit. He's representing Collin and Alpha News. Blackwell is claiming that Collin and those at Alpha knowingly damaged her reputation and lied with malice in how they depicted her testimony in their making of the documentary The Fall of Minneapolis. The Federal Reserve is ending its program that requires the biggest banks in the country to submit data for climate stress test. Bloomberg reports this today. J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, and three others will not be asked to provide information for the Fed's climate scenario analysis exercise. So they don't have to any longer do that. The Federal Reserve says it's changing the story, and they are no longer going to be asking for all of this climate data. So Donald Trump in office, take 575. Forum reports that Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison is suing to block President Trump's executive order that would halt all federal funding to medical institutions that provide gender-affirming care. Ellison, alongside attorneys general from Washington and Oregon, argued the executive order violates the Fifth Amendment's equal protection guarantee and unlawfully overrides laws and funding approved by Congress. Donald Trump, meanwhile, has pumped the brakes on a program to dole out funds to states for electric vehicle charging infrastructure. The move regarding the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program comes less than a month into President Trump's second term in office. This particular program is a $5 billion allotment of federal money to develop an electric vehicle charging station program. It was signed into law as part of the Joe Biden rule back in 2021, the Inflation Reduction Act, which really had nothing to do with inflation after all. Valley News Live reports the U.S. winter virus season is in full force, and by one measure, it's the most intense in 15 years. They are measuring the number of doctor's office visits driven by flu-like symptoms. And last week, that number was higher than the peak of any other winter flu season since 2010. This is according to the CDC. A couple more here for you in the 4 o'clock wrap. U.S. workers are staying put. Fewer of us are quitting their jobs. So the great resignation might have come to an end there. The number of U.S. workers that quit their job last year tumbled 11% from the year before, according to data released by the Labor Department. It is 22% less than 2022, when a lot of people were going all over all the time to make another buck. And finally, the big Labor Department report came out today. The U.S. economy added 143,000 jobs in January. This was a slower pace than expected. And the number 143,000 is down from 307,000 jobs created in December. The unemployment rate came in at 4% lower than economists' expectations. And those, friends, are some of the stories making headlines here on this Friday afternoon. When we come back, the final jobs report tells us a lot about where those jobs were located. It is the final jobs report of the Biden presidency. Where were those jobs created in January? We'll dive into that coming up next. All right, Super Bowl is Sunday, and if you want to send a prediction along, I'm saving them up here. I've got one prediction that came in here already, Eagles 27, Chiefs 24. Yeah, I'm tracking with a lot of that. What do you think? Would love to get your guesses. You can text them in, 701-237-1590. You can email studio@flagfamily.com. Do it that way as well. All right, so where were the jobs in January? Well, the manufacturing sector had a few, 3,000 jobs there. Healthcare was a big hirer, a big increase in healthcare, 43,700 jobs. Hospitals were up almost 14,000 there. Retail added 34,000 jobs last month. The government added 32,000 jobs in January. The average from 2024 was 38,000 for the year, so not much change there. That's going to be one number worth watching this year to see what that net change is, because Donald Trump is doing the buyouts and early retirements and all of that and probably going to be closing down some departments. So we're not going to see those kind of gains continue. No doubt about that. Social assistance, which is basically government job too, added 22,300. Mining, and this would be like oil and gas extraction as well, lost 7,700 jobs in January. So, it's kind of what we've seen before, that when you take healthcare and government and put them together, and government underwrites a lot of health care with Medicare, Medicaid, those are always the bigger factors in why we added jobs. We don't typically see a lot of, organic private sector, accounting, bookkeeping, construction, manufacturing jobs. Those are the ones that really will propel the country forward. So we haven't seen a whole lot of that. And it would be kind of nice if we would see more of that, because that's a huge piece of this. I heard a really good discussion that took place on Fox News Channel today, and they were talking about these numbers, and we went from 307,000 jobs created in December to 143 in January. So it cut by more than half. And this is the last jobs report of the Joe Biden presidency. So this is like the final statement. You can't go by 1 month and say this means everything. But we've certainly seen these trends. And if you look at this on a graph or a chart, you'll see that we really had obviously a lot of hiring going on in 2022, coming out of COVID, 21 and 22, after a lot of jobs were cut. But since that has happened, we've not seen that bounce back where we see more hiring. It's gone down, down, down. And we should see some leveling and some increases. And we really haven't seen much of that. Now, seasonality has something to do with January. It's not a month when typically there's a lot of jobs created. It's a winter month for a lot of the country. And so you got construction jobs and things like that, that they're not going to hire people right now. You also have this sort of adjustment to a new year that happens in the C-suite, where job hirings and creation will typically happen. They're, coming back out of the end of the year, getting started for the new year. You get a little more of that in February and March, where you get the decision makers start to say, we're going to need to move forward. Let's move these people into this area. That means we're going to have to hire a few more people. So I think we'll see more things happen naturally just from seasonality. But with Donald Trump in office, my guess is it's going to take a little while for those hiring numbers to really jump. I think a lot of us are hoping that we see an immediate bounce from President Trump being in office. And certainly we've seen some good things, like crude oil was $79 a barrel on January 15th, now just over 70. Well, the new president has certainly had a lot to do with that. Basically, since the inauguration, oil prices down 10%. But remember, when you're talking about the business people of this country, they've been hit by the inflation bug worse than most of us have who are just trying to put food on the table, because they're doing that in addition to trying to put food on their company's table, if that makes sense. So all these people are dealing with higher input costs for the products they make. They're dealing with higher employee costs year over year than what they've had before. They probably have had to refinance some or take out some debt or refinance some, and those interest rates are higher now as well. So you've got a lot of these different things that kind of bruise up the private sector. The government can just, like we saw in the city of Fargo. City of Fargo says, we want to spend more. We're just going to do it. We don't care. We're going to raise taxes. Well, in the real world with businesses, it doesn't work that way. And you might, as a business owner, you might have had to take a pay cut yourself, or cut a division of your company that's going to limit maybe your income, but it'll limit more of your expenses for a while as well. And so this is a time when a lot of businesses are getting leaner and meaner, but they are going to need to replenish any cash reserves they had that might have been depleted over the last few years. They're going to need to, maybe in some cases where they haven't been able to offer increased wages as much as they would have liked to because of the way things have been, it's going to take them a little while to get to that position where they feel like, okay, things are better and I can do some of that. So when it comes to expansion, starting a new business, a new line for your company, things like that, it's just going to take a while because business owners, and I talk to a lot of them, they are feeling optimistic and encouraged by a new administration, but they've got a little trauma to work through before they're ready to say, let's go. I'm ready to roll the dice and add more overhead, add more payroll, add more expenses of one kind or another to make all these other things go. So it's just a little bit of that settling out period that we need to go through here to make it all happen. Now, if you can get lower interest rates and President Trump can do more deregulation, now you're igniting the entire private sector. So we'll hope for those things to happen, but they can't cut rates if they are continuing to be concerned about getting down to 2% inflation, because we're not going that way. We're going the other way right now. It's 4:33 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Time to check in with Chris Larson, who's in for Austin today, checking in from the Flag Family Newsroom. Been working this afternoon, putting together the headlines of the day. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you, brother. How's it going down there?
It's been a busy afternoon.
Okay.
It's actually been a busy last hour. A lot of news breaking here of the last hour. North Dakota House Bill 1585 has failed in the state house. This bill, which would require reporting illegal immigrants to U.S. Immigration and Customs, failed 50-41. I spoke to Representative Ben Koppelman, who told me that the biggest thing with this failing is because that members of the House felt it wasn't needed because law enforcement are already reporting.
Okay.
So no need for that to pass.
Okay.
Secretary of State Michael Howe has announced that a proposed petition to initiate a constitutional measure was submitted to his office for review and approval to circulate. The proposed constitutional initiative relates to public records, legislative salaries, and lobbying. It was the chairperson of the committee is Gerald Gorick of McGregor, and that was filed earlier today. And they have five days, to draft a petition title, that being the Secretary of State and Attorney General.
Okay, so what do they want to do? What is this constitutional measure going to do?
So I had to look at it a little bit closer because I wasn't sure. But basically, it's calling for transparency, ethics, and accountability within the legislature. What they're asking is for all records of communications between members of the Legislative Assembly relating to legislative business be considered public record and shall be subject to the public inspection rules upon proper request. They're also asking that members of the assembly must disclose the existence of potential conflicts of interest arising in any bill in which the member may have a direct, unique, substantial, or individual interest in, as well as they don't want an increase in legislative salary or the per diem. And that should be effective for individual legislators if enacted during the current term of office.
They have no chance of getting this voted to pass by the people of North Dakota. You can't even explain to me what this measure is. How in the world is someone going to be sitting in a voting booth with these like five things they want to get done and think that's going to get through?
And I thought actually that the other two things are the most interesting. The one is that legislative services consider part-time employment. Therefore, legislators are not eligible for health care insurance or any other employment-related benefits, and no former legislator may be a lobbyist or state legislative matters for one full four-year term after leaving office. That was the most interesting.
Okay, all right. Well, they're going to have to boil that down. I don't know how Michael Howe and his team are going to even write that up. That was like five things.
I don't either. And that literally, I was on my way down the hallway when I found out about it. So I'm going to reach out to Michael on Monday. Okay. And then last but not least, the Minnesota State High School League has announced that it's going to allow transgender athletes to participate consistent with their gender identity. In a statement, the league says participation and eligibility of transgender student athletes is determined by state law through the Human Rights Act and the Constitution. The high school league, similar to other youth sports organizations, is subject to anti-discrimination laws in the state, which prohibit discrimination based on gender identity.
Okay, so I always get confused with these stories that talk about gender identity, but they're basically saying that if a male wants to compete in female activities, Minnesota High School League is going to allow that.
Yes.
Whereas the NCAA just went the other direction.
And contrary to what President Trump just signed earlier this week.
Okay. So the Minnesota State High School League wants boys to win the girls 100-meter dash.
Correct.
Is what we got out of that. Okay. Correct. Chris, thank you very much. Appreciate the update, my man. Great to have you in the building today.
You bet. See you Monday.
Chris Larson from the Flag Family Newsroom. Now let's send it over to meteorologist Dean Wysocki. He's got a check of the weather for us and the weekend forecast here from the Skywatch Weather Center.
Steve, another winter storm is heading our way as we're already seeing snow overspread areas along and south of the 94 corridor. In fact, the winter storm warnings have been issued south of the 94 corridor all the way from the southeastern corner into the southwestern part of the state and along the 94 corridor all the way from Bismarck through Fargo. And into Lakes Country, we're looking at winter weather advisories. A total snowfall expected from this storm is going to be about 2 to 4 along the 94 corridor. There could be an isolated higher amount. And then south of 94, where the winter storm warnings are in effect, we're looking for 4 to 6 inches of snow, possibly a touch more, maybe up to 7 inches in some areas. Now, you go north of 94 by 30, 40 miles, we're not looking at any snow. There's going to be a sharp cutoff with this system as it moves from west to east. The good news about this is there's not going to be a lot of wind with it like the last system, so we're not going to have to deal with a lot of the blowing and the drifting of the snow. Snow will continue through the night and should start to wind down by Saturday morning. And after that, the weekend looks quiet. Winds won't be that strong, 10 to 20, right in that general range on Saturday, and lighter winds on Sunday with temperatures in the teens. Now, Arctic air pours in for early next week. In fact, we're looking at dangerously cold weather with wind chills about 30 to 45 below to start off next week. Now, next week looks pretty quiet but cold in terms of weather. But as we approach Valentine's Day or mid-month, and then mid-month through about the third week of the month, according to the LRC, there's going to be some active weather in both the northern and central plains.
Okay, thank you, Dean. Appreciate the update, my friend. When we come back on the program, economist Raheem Williams will join us today. We're going to talk about the jobs information that came out today. What do we make of all that? Plus, the latest GDP numbers. What does that mean for our country? And are we going in the right direction? And how fast can that change under Donald Trump? All that and more coming up next. All right, let's face it. It's hard to want to write a bigger check to your insurance agent. We all understand that. But especially if you're on a farm or a ranch, well, it's easy to forget about making sure you've got enough coverage on your outbuildings. You know, you get going with the barns, the house, all the machinery. That's what everybody thinks about and talks about. But with your outbuildings, maybe you only have them covered at $50,000, but to rebuild that machine shed or that other building you've got out there back, it might be couple hundred grand. Well, you maybe don't need that amount of coverage, but you need enough. You know who can help you with that? DJ Coulter at American Family Insurance. DJ, a great friend of mine, great patriot, great fan of the show here. And DJ would love to visit with you if you want to make sure that your farm or your ranch is covered. And look, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars in coverage to rebuild, but we're not talking about that much that you're going to have to write the check out for. You can get a lot of coverage for a very small amount of money, and DJ Coulter will be happy to visit with you about all of that. Give him a call at 701-235-6641, and you'll be surprised at how far your insurance dollar can stretch. That's 701-235-6641. We're pleased to welcome to the program right now Raheem Williams. Raheem, an occasional guest on our program. We're always thankful to have him. He joins us today on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Hi, Raheem. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Steve?
Doing well. Appreciate you taking some time today. I knew that we were going to get this big jobs number out today, and I thought it might be interesting to visit with you because this is kind of the last jobs report from the Joe Biden era. And we got a number in today that fell a little bit short of expectations and also was a steep decline from December's job number as well. And I thought, well, I don't want to kick a man when he's down, but it certainly seems to be a fitting end to the Joe Biden presidency to have a disappointing jobs number that was propelled by a lot of government jobs. So as you took a look at the report that came in today, what were some of the takeaways that you have on what you saw?
Well, I mean, we should all be a little thankful we're on to a new era. Let's just get that out the way.
Correct.
I didn't find the jobs. I found the jobs report to be very meh. I feel like the AP, out of all organizations, not my favorite organizations, but the Associated Press kind of nailed it with this headline. Solid, but unspectacular. Unspectacular. So it's like, it's not the worst, right? Worse would be job loss. Worse would be, you know, declining wages. So it's like, it's not the worst. It's just not the best. It's just very meh.
Yeah.
And what stuck out to me particularly, we have high teenage unemployment at 11.8%. Although that may seem irrelevant, who cares about teenagers? There's actually a lot of research that shows that there's immense value in getting your first job, and it has down the line impact on your lifetime income because you learn a lot of things in terms about good work ethic, being a team player, and just basically being a responsible functioning adult on that first job. So we definitely, especially because unemployment numbers are only calculated by people who want to work, we definitely want more opportunities for young Americans to kind of step up and be a part of the economy. So that stuck out to me. There's also there's a decent gap between black and white unemployment. Black unemployment's 6.2%. So that's a little concerning, especially for our urban communities where that's a little more impactful. Another thing that stuck out, and this is the really big takeaway, long-term unemployed, those who've been jobless for 27 weeks, that's about at 1.4 million, and that's completely unchanged. We do have a problem of the perpetually unemployed, and those things have downhill ramifications on Social Security benefits, public safety net programs, and in addition to crime as well. So we don't want people desperate for money, and we don't want them on welfare. So getting that number of chronically unemployed down is something that we definitely need to put a little bit of focus on. And something that sticks out particularly for North Dakota is that there was net loss, job loss of 8,000 in the oil and gas industry and mining and quarry. So that also speaks to perhaps an issues of health in terms of our oil and gas extraction, particularly here in the United States. And hopefully this new administration will be able to do something about unleashing American energy.
Yes. We've
heard a lot about it. But those are high-paying jobs, and those are also jobs that tend to attract particularly chronically unemployed men who don't mind going out there and doing the dirty work. So that's something that we want to keep an eye on, and we definitely want our natural resources sector to be very healthy, yeah. And that's particularly true in North Dakota.
We saw some numbers in the retail side of things that ticked up pretty good. Retail added about 34,000 jobs. That's a good sign. But most of the jobs created kind of in that top five, we get healthcare and we get government. And the government added 32,000 jobs in January. That's pretty consistent to what government job growth was in 2024 as well. So other than retail, it's hard to find a lot to be excited about. Yes, we had some job creation, 140,000 or whatever. But again, like we see so often here, about half of that is either government or healthcare jobs, and you got some social assistance in there as well. So if you add up all those things that are either direct or indirectly funded by the government, it does seem as though we're really struggling to get those, you know, accounting jobs or those construction jobs, the kind of things that indicate that employers are feeling more confident and that the economy is getting a little bit more robust. What am I missing there?
I mean, I think you're right, but I also would like to say that we are in an interesting space in our economy. Like, we're not, you know, the year after COVID, right, with everybody opening up and hiring.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's always going to be some unemployment. You're always going to have some friction in the labor market. And like I said, I don't see anything here that is particularly alarming, but I also don't see much to be excited about. It seems, I guess the term will be slow and steady.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. I'm particularly more concerned about the wage picture. That's probably the biggest. And, you know, as we're dealing with inflation, the cost of groceries, wage growth has just been so flat and anemic. It actually plummeted during the Biden administration. Then it kind of plateaued out. So basically, we all work for a reason. So saying, hey, people have jobs, that's great. Saying people are working, of course, that's better than being unemployed. But we don't work for subsistence, right? We're not subsistence farmers. We work to advance our lives. We work to advance our families and to build a better future for ourselves. That's the entire concept of the American dream. Is
yes.
That you can work. If you work hard, you can get ahead.
Yep.
And that wage growth is just not telling that story, and it hasn't for a while. And that's really where a lot of the pain is felt. When people talk about, you know, last year's election, it's like, oh, the economy looks great. The economy's great. I was like, well, if you look at the wages picture, you'll understand exactly why people mm-hmm. are pissed. Their grocery bills are through the roof, and they're not making more money. So saying you're working, yeah, you're working, but in a lot of cases, you're working for less or barely for much at all. And that's not conducive to a bright future. That's not going to make a lot of people happy. People don't like to feel like they're working to get nowhere. And that's kind of a big problem. And that's the story for a lot of Americans at this time. And we'll see if a new change in governance can spur some wage growth.
Yeah, another year where whatever you got for an increase in pay, it wasn't enough to make up for, you know, what the true cost of living was. And we've seen that now on a regular basis. I want to ask you, Raheem, what you made of the numbers that came out about a week ago about gross domestic product, the GDP number for the fourth quarter. 2.3% was the number that came in the fourth quarter. It had been 3.1% in the third quarter. So we saw a definite decline there of, I don't know what that is, 30, 35% or so. What did you make of GDP numbers? And to me, I just looked at it, I couldn't find anything to get excited about there. And it felt like it was a bad report. How did you see it?
So this is actually an interesting conversation amongst economists. So some people believe anything 2% and higher, or, you know, around 2% is good for a developed economy. I tend to believe we still have more than enough space and room in this country to squeeze out 3% on a regular basis. That's my opinion. I mean, we have vast land expanse. We have, like I told you, we have millions of people that are marginally attached to the workforce. We have one of the best technological and natural resource endowments in the world, if not the best. So there's the idea that we have to settle for anemic growth standards as a developed economy, like if we're the Europeans, those goofy socialists. I reject that. I don't believe that. Yeah. I just don't. I don't. Yeah. I think it's true. So I think if the current administration gets serious about cutting through regulatory red tape,
yes,
and also enabling American business, and I hope this is, and I can't speak for the administration, I'm not a part of it, but I hope this is the overall goal of the tariff threats, which is to make foreign markets more competitive for American companies and exports, because the truth of the matter is, the Europeans do tariff the crap out of our goods, and they do regulate the crap out of our companies, and they do make it hard for us to sell to their people. It's true. And there's and to a lesser extent, but still true of Canada, is still true. They are very protectionist, and that's the side the big media doesn't want to tell you, that they're not letting us compete, because they know if they want to compete against Americans, they're going to lose. They're terrified of that. They don't want to directly compete with us. They know that we have the most productive workforce in the world, and they protect their economies heavily. They do it with their auto industry. That's why they're always fining Apple and Microsoft, and they're always trying to break them up and hit them up. They can't compete. They aren't innovators. We are. So they do these dirty tricks, and I think Trump is serious about taking that on. And in that aspect, I'm cheering for him. I'm definitely not a fan of tariffs, but as a negotiating tool, if it can open up markets for Americans, I think that's really smart, because at the end of the day, like I said, the rest of the world cannot compete with American workers.
Yeah, 100%.
And if they stop cheating and trade, and also in terms of monetary policy, like devaluing currencies and stuff like that, if they stop cheating and doing these dirty trade tricks, American businesses will prosper immensely, and Americans will prosper immensely. And that's hopefully the future we're heading towards.
Yeah, let's hope so. If we can get that deregulation you talked about, it's a topic that people don't talk a whole lot about, but it's a powerful deal. It makes things simple and less expensive for businesses. So if you can get a deregulatory environment when you have low or at least moderate interest rates, now you've got an opportunity to really ignite business. Hopefully it happens with this president here. Raheem, I could talk to you all day about this stuff. I do appreciate you making time for me on a Friday evening. Thanks again for giving us a few minutes. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Steve. It's always a pleasure.
Yep, same here. Thanks so much. That's Raheem Williams, the great one. He is always good enough to give us a few minutes when I call him. 4:55, Steve Hallstrom Show. Short break for us. Be back and finish off the hour after this. All right, from the text line, Steve, the North Dakota House Bill 1176 looks good. It triples the $500 property tax credit, implements a spending cap with flexibility, and raises a single standard deduction to about $54,000, $90,000 for joint filers on the income tax side. I think that would raise the number of North Dakotans paying no income tax to about 75%. Yeah, probably right. I like on a personal level, because of where I live, I like the bill that would be a 60% property tax abatement, because that to me works out more than $1,500 does. But I believe that for most of the state, that would be a good thing. All right, hour number two, the program coming up here, still to come. We got some Super Bowl predictions and many other things. Don't go away. Steve Hallstrom Studio is built on a solid foundation thanks to our sponsor, Precision Concrete Cutters in Ramjack North. Your home is your greatest asset. Protect it. Go to PCCND.com to learn more. Hour two of the program, we're going to start with the top five at five, but I want you to know we are guest-free the remainder of the way. So if there's something you want to talk about, would love to hear your thoughts on it. Is there something that needs to be said about the jobs picture in the United States? We talk a lot about, you know, kind of from a clinical diagnosis perspective, if you will. We take a look at what the numbers are and where the jobs are going and what they're doing, what it really means. But what do you think the story of jobs in our part of the world is? Do you think that it's still as good an environment as it was for employees who are looking for another job as maybe it was 3 or 4 years ago coming out of COVID? What do you think about that? Have the wages increased from what you know of, from your workplace or people you know? Is that different? Always interested to hear what you're hearing, because we see these headlines and things like that that come out of D.C., but it's a little different what's happening on Main Street. So I'd love to hear your thoughts and your comments on that. We're going to talk today about the Department of Education, continuing a conversation we started yesterday on this program with kind of a North Dakota angle from the Department of Public Instruction. And basically the message we got there was, you know, if we can get the funding, we don't really need the Department of Education really for anything. So maybe it's an idea whose time has come to dismantle the federal Department of Education and just let individual states figure that out. All I know is this, we got to be able to have better outcomes for our students. And I get it. A lot of students now go to private schools, and some of the more affluent families send their kids to private school, and that sort of, you know, thins out the pool of kids that are in public schools as well. And if all you have is kids who, you know, don't have the opportunities and don't have the privileges, and now you got those kids in public school, it's going to be harder there. But we still shouldn't have like 38% of proficiency rates for our eighth graders in math and English. We just have to be able to do better. Maybe you have some ideas on that, what the best way to go is to get better outcomes in our schools. Would love to hear if you have some thoughts on that. I'm also going to read to you a commentary on birthright citizenship that I thought was really well done. I think that makes a lot of sense to me. Hopefully it will to you as well. And before we finish up, we're going to have to do some predictions. What do you got for the big game on Sunday? Eagles, Chiefs, I see the Chiefs are a 1 or 1.5 point favorite, so it's basically a flip of a coin. Got some thoughts on this game. I'll pass along. Maybe you have some too. Let's share some thoughts on this one as we go through this hour of the program. All right, let's get going with the top 5 and 5. And these are what I believe to be the 5 most consequential stories in the news cycle today. And I start with a story that comes out of Washington, D.C. that you might kind of yawn about, but I think this is really interesting. John Hoeven is one of a list of a bunch of Republican senators who have introduced a couple of bills that would get American energy jacked up in a hurry. With a new president in office, this could definitely work. Basically, the bills would require 4 annual onshore lease sales in top oil and gas producing states, 2 annual offshore lease sales in the Gulf of America, and 6 offshore lease sales over 10 years in Alaska's Cook Inlet. It would also remove the 2% administration fee on federal oil and gas royalty payments to local communities. Hoeven is quoted as saying this bill would help unlock American energy and encourage global leadership to make the U.S. energy dominant. If you have been following this program or probably any other show on this station that gives you local content, you know that one of the big frustrations for Governor Burgum, Drew Wrigley, a lot of elected officials across the state is that the Biden administration, which was legally obligated to hold a certain number of lease auctions or lease sales, they didn't do it. And they just basically said, no, we're just not going to do it. We know it's the law. We know we're breaking the law, but we don't care. This is just how we're going to do it. And so now with Trump in office, the hope with this bill is that they can get not only the auctions and sales that were mandated federally, but also add some more. Because if we have more opportunities for more companies to do more drilling, it will therefore increase the amount of supply available. It'll bring prices down, but it'll give us a valuable asset that we can sell to our friends overseas. I also, I didn't know that there was a 2% administration fee on federal oil and gas royalty payments to local communities. I think that's interesting as well. When you talk about removing a tax of some kind or a fee of some kind, you got to be careful to delineate that between the royalty payments that are made. Because if you read through this fast, you might think, oh, they're taking money out of local communities now. No, they're taking away the 2% administration fee, which is basically another way of saying tax on the royalty payments to local communities. So you might spur more of those payments if you have less taxes on them, but it just is another way to get more companies more interested in producing more energy. So I like this. This is one of the many different ways we're seeing the energy conversation get very real here in our country under the new president. All right. The Forum reports today that the North Dakota House of Representatives passed a bill by a count of 73-18 that would increase limitations on school bathrooms across the state. Now, what's happening here is that the state legislature, back in the 2023 session, passed a law that prohibits schools from adopting policies that allow transgender students to choose their preferred bathroom. It used to be that if you were a boy, you had to use the boys' bathroom. If you were a girl, you used the girls'. And if you were a boy but you wanted to use the girls', you couldn't do that. And so the legislature passed that law to make that make that kind of enshrined in our state law. And now with kind of the conversation happening across the country, there are a lot of people that are saying, well, those sorts of laws might come under fire. But, or if you had some schools that just didn't want to do it, that could be a problem too. But this bill would actually go after schools that say, no, we're not going to play by your rules. And you probably remember that the Fargo superintendent, Rupa Gandhi, said back after the 2023 law was passed that they would not follow that law. And we're going to do what we want. And we think there's some federal standing that we have to basically ignore that law, which we later found out was not true, but that was how they were going to try to do it there. Well, this bill would punish the Fargo School District if they ignore this mandate coming from the state legislature. And this is, it's the reason I think it stands out to me, this story, is it's not often that you see a bill come out basically just targeted toward one school district and one person, which is exactly what we're getting here. Now, Gandhi is moving on to other things, but I think they're taking a look at Fargo and saying, yeah, we're not going to let this stand. So that's story number two. Story number three, it's amazing how Donald Trump has gone after the liberals in the areas that hurt them the hardest. It is all of their theories and social reengineering efforts that Donald Trump is going after the hardest here early in his presidency. DEI, transgender, climate. These kinds of things that have been, this is all that the Biden administration cared about over the last 4 years, was moving to a higher level in all of these areas. Well, it's amazing now how when Donald Trump does what he has been doing, you see the NCAA doing what they did yesterday. You see all these other major U.S. companies saying, oh, good, we've got some cover to abolish our DEI programs that were never work. They were never going to work the way, maybe people thought they should be set up at the beginning, but we had to do something because of all the pressure. Well, the Trump administration is taking the pressure off of them to continue to have these programs going on. Well, another one hit yesterday. The Federal Reserve is ending its program that requires the biggest banks in the country to submit climate data for their loan activity. And so this is J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Citibank, and three others will not be asked to provide information for the Fed's climate scenario analysis exercise. So this is another strike at the heart of one of these social engineering programs, which is the climate area here. So the Federal Reserve is saying no longer are we going to ask you questions about, are your programs, climate friendly anymore. Story number four, along with the climate battle that we're talking about, the Trump administration says that it is going to be ending the funding for a $5 billion electric vehicle charging station program that was signed into law by President Joe Biden back in 2021, the Tax Cuts and Job Act. The Federal Highway Safety Administration says it's going to be withholding funds to states for electric vehicle charging infrastructure. Now, they're not making it illegal to have electric vehicle charging infrastructure. They're just saying, if you want that convenience store chain, you're going to have to put those charging stations in. If you want that auto dealership, fine, but you're going to have to put that in, and so that it's not a federally mandated program that they have anymore. So I think this is notable because this is another way that the Trump administration can take the teeth out of these programs that the Biden administration put in there without making the product illegal, which we still want people to be able to buy electric cars and have charging stations and all of that. They're just saying this is not something that average John Doe or Jane Doe taxpayer should be helping to fund. And finally, story number five, the if it seems like the winter has been a tougher one than normal with illness and flu, well, you're probably right. By one measure, reports the New York Post, the U.S. winter virus season is the most intense in 15 years. One indicator of the flu activity is a percentage of doctor office visits driven by flu-like symptoms. And last week, that number was higher than the peak of any winter flu season since 2009. This is according to data posted by the Centers for Disease Control. So people that are going to the doctor's office that have the flu-like symptoms, those numbers are ridiculously high. The flu has forced some schools to shut down. There was a 3,200 student system near Fort Worth, Texas. They closed for 3 days after 650 students were out on one of those days there. And education officials across Texas are saying that it's the worst flu season they can remember. And the CDC says that this year there have been at least 24 million flu illnesses, 310,000 hospitalizations, and 13,000 deaths, including at least 56 children. And when I see these numbers, it just makes me realize how we freaked out over COVID for numbers with our children, especially, that we're nowhere near these numbers. Now, traditionally, the flu season is going to peak right around February. So hopefully we're getting to the worst part of it. And then seems like spring comes around and things start to get better. So those, friends, are what I believe to be the five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. We call it the Top 5 at 5. It's brought to you by Nancy Kelly Realty. Go to Nancy Kelly Realty and find out more about Colfax Meadows, where small town living is still a thing. When we come back, a good commentary on birthright citizenship. It all seems so easy after you read this. That's next. Well, Giving Hearts Day is coming up next week already. Wow, is it that time of year already? Yeah, it sure is. And one of the great organizations that does a lot of work around our community is the folks at Churches United. And we are thankful to have Charlie Paris on the line here today. He's the Chief Development Officer for Churches United. Charlie, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us on the show today.
Hey, Steve, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about what you all do at Churches United and the need that you serve in the community.
Sure. So Churches United is primarily a homeless-based organization, but not only do we have a homeless shelter, our goal is to get people out of homelessness and into supportive housing. So on top of having a homeless shelter, we have Bright Sky Apartments, which is a supportive housing unit for primarily families, and we are in construction for Silver Linings, which is an apartment complex for 55 and older. Along with all those great things, we have a food pantry that does over 500,000 pounds of food a year, which we're pretty excited about.
Yeah, and the housing thing is something people don't talk a whole lot about, but the housing piece really allows to get somebody on their feet and get them into a better place, correct?
That's correct, yep. You know, we at a shelter, there's really no time limit, but the goal is that we move people into housing. Once you get into housing, you know, that helps a lot of different things. Our Bright Sky Apartments are rent-based income, and they factor in different vouchers through the state of Minnesota as well. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things. Once you get into that housing, it's a restart for you. You got your kids can go to school. There's a bus stop right outside, that kind of thing, versus living at a shelter where you're still kind of in the midst of all the problems happening.
Yeah, there's a lot of different, it's been a big topic in our community here for the last few years about the homeless in our community. And there's a lot of different organizations. There's a lot of different programs out there and places that are caring for the homeless here. But what makes your program and what you do there at Churches United a little different?
one thing that we're, you know, the most proud of, I kind of touched on it, is that we are kind of a full stop, you know, one-stop shop, full service. We don't just do shelter. We don't just do housing. We don't just do food scarcity and that kind of thing. We try to, you know, have a full circle. So when someone comes to us, we can assess every single need rather than just shelter or just housing or things like that. You know, we're lucky to say we've been a strong member of the community for 40 years, and we're hoping to be around for 40 more.
Yeah, we've heard that, you know, there have been some tough days on the financial side there. How are you guys doing now?
You know, we are doing a lot better, Steve. We are excited for 2025. We had a couple of rough months there where we had to do some right sizing, but we're back and better than ever. One thing that we're really excited about next week, we have a Giving Hearts Day community picnic. And, you know, after we came out to the community last fall, we had a community picnic, and that was a really good show for us. So we're hoping to do it again here in February, have a big community outreach. And that'll be at the MSUM Foundation Tuesday night from 5:30 to 7:30.
Okay, sounds good. If you want to find out more about Charlie's team and all the things that they're doing in the community, you can go to churches-united.org. Charlie, thanks for sharing the story today. We appreciate it. Have a great day.
Yep, Steve, have a great weekend.
Thanks
for having me on.
Yeah, you do the same. Take care. Bye. From the text line, Steve, it's strange how so-called conservatives rant about getting big government out of our lives, but instantly want to use the feds to enforce their agenda on local school districts. That is not conservative values. It's the opposite. This is a really interesting conversation because I think you're on to something here, Texter, because we can't be hypocritical in saying, you know, big government is bad, but then big government is good only when we like the things that big government does and we kind of cheerlead for big government to do the things that they do sometimes. I'm not exactly sure which storyline or which issue this text is regarding. We talked about the state of North Dakota, the legislature with interacting with local schools here, like Fargo schools, on the transgender bathroom thing. Then we talked about the Department of Education and the and local schools here in North Dakota. In neither of those would I say that the stories about getting big government out of our lives or enforcing their agenda on local school districts. The feds haven't really done that. We're talking about Department of Education as an entity that maybe we don't need anymore. And then the story about the state government getting involved with local schools is where I think the best discussion can be had on your point. And I would agree that the state legislature should not be in the business of telling schools how to teach our kids, because you know, that's best done by local communities and people in the community that vote for school board members that help drive the curriculum and things like that. Where I do think there's an opportunity for state legislatures to get involved with schools is if we're talking about how things are done, where in how the schools are run, like the structure of how the schools are being run, or in this case, the issue that we've been talking about is, can a school structure its bathrooms in such a way that you can have biological males in the girls' bathroom? Now, that's the side of it we worry about. We don't really care if biological girls want to be in the boys' bathroom, although that could be disruptive too. And in the girls' bathroom, you have stalls, and so it's not like the guys at the urinals or whatever, so it's a different kind of story there. But I do like this conversation, and I think we do need to be reminded from time to time that if we're going to be consistent in our messaging about big government is bad, we have to be consistent in our messaging there. In this case, I don't know what the texter is, what issue there or story they're commenting on specifically, because we haven't had a story specifically like that. But when it comes to schools, we want people that know how kids learn to be able to help kids do that learning, and we want kids doing that learning in the school building. And I don't know that anybody wants the federal government to come in and say, we're going to tell Fargo, North Dakota how to teach their students, or Botno, North Dakota, or, you know, Walker, Minnesota. Those things, I think, should be done by people close to the situation. Maybe some of the bigger picture management things, facilities, and, you know, are you going to let your kids, you know, go to certain demonstrations but not others, and how do they figure that out? Maybe there's a role for the legislature there to play a watchdog, but I really wish that more of those things were handled by local residents going to school board meetings and saying, I have this particular problem. So thank you for the text. It's a good conversation for us to have. All right, 5:32, Steve Holsham Show. When we come back, I do want to read for you this commentary I saw earlier today on birthright citizenship. It all seems really easy and basic when you have it broken down by people who know what they're talking about. So we'll do that. Plus, the Democrats tried to break in the Department of Education building today, but they got the stop sign from the guy who was running security. It was an interesting afternoon. We'll talk about that as we continue on the Steve Holsham Show. The Claremont Institute is a conservative think tank that has provided perspective to conservative politicians, Republican elected officials for years. John Eastman is one of the Claremont Institute scholars. You might remember that name as someone who was part of the effort to defend Donald Trump regarding the January 6th proceedings there. He's written a commentary for AmericanMind.org that I was tipped off to by somebody a couple of days ago, and I think it's really well written. I want to read it for you. It's about a five-minute read here, but I think it's good, and it helps me understand this. Hopefully it will for you as well. This is, we're talking about, should children who were born here of people who are in the country illegally be granted citizenship? That's what we're talking about here. John says it this way. Our argument is straightforward. The text of the 14th Amendment contains two requirements for acquiring automatic citizenship by birth. One must be born in the United States and be subject to its jurisdiction. The proper understanding of the citizenship clause, therefore, turns on what drafters of the amendment and those who ratified it meant by, quote, subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Was it merely a partial temporary jurisdiction, such as applies to anyone, except for diplomats, who are subject to our laws while they are within our borders? Or does it instead apply to only those who are subject to a more complete jurisdiction, one that manifests itself as owing allegiance to the U.S. and not to any other foreign power? Think of it this way. Someone from Great Britain visiting the U.S. is subject to our laws here, which is to say subject to our partial or territorial jurisdiction. He must drive on the right side of the road rather than the left. But he does not thereby owe allegiance to the United States. He's not subject to being drafted into our army, and he cannot be prosecuted for treason if he takes up arms against the United States, for he has breached no oath of allegiance. So which understanding of subject to the jurisdiction did the drafters of the 14th Amendment have in mind? Well, happily, we don't need to speculate, as they were asked that very question. They unambiguously stated that it meant complete jurisdiction, such as existed under the law at the time, the Civil Rights Act of 1866, which excluded from citizenship those born on U.S. soil who were, quote, subject to a foreign power. The Supreme Court confirmed that understanding in the first case addressing the 14th Amendment that the phrase subject to its jurisdiction was intended to exclude from its operation children of ministers, consuls, and children or subjects of foreign states born within the U.S. It then confirmed that the understanding in the 1884 case of Elk versus Wilkins held that the subject to jurisdiction phrase required that one not be, quote, merely subject in some respect or degree to the jurisdiction of the U.S., but completely subject to their political jurisdiction and owing them direct and immediate allegiance. John Elk, the Native American claimant in the case, did not meet that requirement because as a member of an Indian tribe at his birth, he owed immediate allegiance to his tribe and not to the United States. Thomas Cooley, the leading treatise writer of the era, also confirmed that subject to the jurisdiction of the United States meant full and complete jurisdiction to which citizens are generally subject and not any qualified and partial jurisdiction which may consist with allegiance to some other government. More fundamentally, this understanding of the citizenship clause is the only one compatible with the consent of the governed principle that's articulated in the Declaration of Independence. All of this matters a great deal because on the first day of his second term in office, President Trump issued an executive order protecting the meaning and value of American citizenship, which adopted the view of the citizenship clause that I and other Claremont scholars have espoused. It directs every department and agency of the U.S. government to accept our view henceforth as a correct interpretation of the Constitution's citizenship clause. This may be the most legally controversial executive order issued by the president on day one. Because of that, it's already being challenged in court as 22 states have filed a lawsuit trying to block its implementation a little more than 24 hours after it was signed. So I thought that was a pretty good review there, basically taking that phrase that means everything here, which is the jurisdiction piece. So I thought that was good. I thought you might enjoy that as well. All right. The best thing I heard today came from our good friends at Fox Business, as they put together a conversation today based on some events that happened today in Washington, D.C. A group of House Democrats paid a visit to the Department of Education building. And we don't really know why they were there, because they didn't have any official business there. And the guard at the building said, "I'm sorry, I can't let you in. We have a policy here that says it doesn't matter who you are. If you are not authorized on the clearance list to get in, then I cannot let you in." And so it was Maxine Waters and some other, you know, big talkers that just wanted to get involved in the conversation. So I'm going to play you today the news story that was done about this with some of the commentary there, and then a kind of a four-person sort of breakdown of what happened after that. And this is David Asman, who's filling in for Larry Kudlow on the Larry Kudlow Show, along with Alex Marlow, who's a Breitbart editor, Sarah Carter, Fox contributor, and Gianno Caldwell, also a Fox contributor. And this was the scene at the Department of Education building today as Maxine Waters and her buddies tried to do a breaking and entering sort of a scene at the Department of Education building.
We pay him. We raise money to make sure that we have a Department of Education. Everybody that's hired at the Department of Education are here because we pay for them.
And I'm a member of Congress with oversight responsibilities trying to request a meeting, and a private security contractor is not allowing me to enter the building.
Elon Musk and Donald Trump want to shut down the Department of Education. Suddenly they don't want to let members of Congress in.
But the security guard at the Department of Education stood his ground and turned them away.
You don't have a business reason to be here.
You do not have authority, sir.
We're the appropriate.
If you have an appointment, then you're on a guest list. We will let you in.
A Department of Education spokesperson telling Fox, quote, "The protest was organized by members of Congress who were exercising their First Amendment rights, which they are at liberty to do. They did not have any scheduled appointments, and the protest has since ended." President Trump weighed in on the incident this afternoon.
Oh, I see the same ones. I see Maxine Waters, a lowlife. I see, you know, all these people. They don't love our country. They don't love our country. We want great education.
House Democrats are clearly frustrated by talk the president could shut down the education department. David?
I want to buy that security card drink. I don't care who he is or how I can get him. But if you get his phone number, give it to me. I want to buy him a case of beer. Mike Emanuel, thank you very much. For more on all this, let's bring in our all-star panel. We have Gianno Caldwell, Fox News political analyst and founder of the Caldwell Institute for Public Safety, Sarah Carter, Fox News contributor, and Alex Marlow, editor-in-chief of Breitbart News and co-author of the Breitbart Business Digest and host of the Alex Marlow Show. Good to see you all. Thanks for being here. Sarah, first of all, that poor security guard. Actually, he held his ground very well. He didn't look like a beefy guy, but he knew how to keep them at bay. But the bottom line is this, Sarah. We are spending such an enormous amount of money. The Department of Education taking over the role of a lot of school boards and designing their own curricula and doing their own work. I actually worked as a junior high school teacher in Gianno's former town of Gianno's town of Chicago. I was in Cabrini Green. Yeah. I'm sure you've heard of that, Gianno. It was a very tough area.
Tough streets.
The parents were dying for good education, and they weren't getting it. And we were being forced to use stuff from the DOED that was bad material, bad educational material. They bribed the school board into accepting it, and they did, and it wasn't working. That's the problem. We have, by the way, test scores for all this money that we're spending are going down. We just heard last week, and it's not just a pandemic. From 2022 to now, reading and math scores have plummeted, so they have no excuse whatsoever, the Department of Ed.
Well, yeah. I mean, David, they've not only plummeted, but the cost per pupil has gone over 245% since the 1970s because of the Department of Education, to the tune of, like, I think $103.9 billion last year, divided between their 10 subcomponents. And parents were waking up. I mean, all you have to do is look back at COVID. As soon as there was the lockdown and parents were keeping students at home, our eyes were wide open. I saw it for myself. My friends were calling me in Virginia from Loudoun County. They were saying, this is a joke. Our children aren't learning. Our teachers have a woke agenda. The money is being diverted to social engineering programs. I mean, I think Elon Musk and the president are seeing it for what it is. They're listening to parents. Parents want choices. They want choices.
That's right.
Whether you're in the most urban, you know, area of Chicago to the most rural place in Ohio, parents want choices for their children so that they can have a great education and that they can move forward.
And tax.
I think this is a subject we haven't talked about enough on this program, at least. We talk about the Department of Education. We're saying, you know, why are we funding this if we don't really need it? What's it doing? And if it's not going to do anything positive, let's get rid of it. Well, if you've got the Department of Education that is telling all these schools, you know, keep your kids in masks, keep them locked up, you know, don't let them in the building, don't let kids together, no activities. Not only are they not helping, they are actually hurting. If that's happening, then that's another reason we need to get honest about what the DOE is doing or not doing.
None of this
Alex,
anymore.
Taxpayers want an accounting. I mean, it's not only the money Department of Education is getting. Remember, there was all that COVID funding for K through 12, $189 billion. Alex, do we have any idea where that money went? Certainly didn't go to raising test scores.
No, it's all administration stuff. Yeah, I was thinking about it. What was the last time that the Department of Education did anything interesting? They cracked down on the red state governors who wanted to ban masks in school, which turned out to be anti-science and were totally antisocial.
Yes.
That was the last time they did anything. If you did an audit of all the people who are worthwhile working at the Department of Education, you're going to turn up zero names of anyone doing anything good. So here's the plan. Here's what they got to do. Just fire everyone. You don't even have to get rid of the Department of Education. It's got to be an act of Congress to do that anyway. Just go in there, fire every single person so that no one works there. Maybe leave one person to mop the floor, and that's it. Education will improve when the Department of Education gets out of the way and local communities and families can take the lead on people's education.
Well, and give them a choice. Sarah mentioned this, Gianno, the fact that the president did sign an executive order expanding the idea of school choice, putting the federal government behind the idea. It's no longer an experiment. He wants to make it the rule of law, the way we do business in American education system. How would school choice, giving people the money back that they're now paying for education, subpar education, and allowing them to spend it where they want to, where they know their kids will learn something, how will that change the situation in a place like Chicago?
Well, to be honest with you, and we think about places like Illinois, where Chicago is in, we've seen multiple failing schools where the children don't know how to read or write at their grade level, and that's all of them in a particular school. Multiple schools are like that. School choice would highly benefit Chicagoans, and it doesn't matter if you're African-American, Hispanic, white, Asian, whatever the case may be. This is specialized education. We know that the school unions have been protecting bad teachers for many years. We see that these bad teachers who can give a care about students and those that are struggling, we see them regularly disappoint parents. And when you look at these test scores, so school choice would be a phenomenal idea for the federal government to really get involved. But we also know that many of these blue states and cities attempt at every turn to block school choice and giving parents the opportunity to bring their children into schools that will actually care about their education.
Yeah, it's such a fascinating conversation. I'm a big believer in public education, as you know, because I grew up in a public school. My kids grew up in public schools not that long ago, and they had great experiences, great teachers, academic programs, activities, extracurriculars. We had a great experience. And if you allow school choice so that every kid in North Dakota gets a voucher to go to a private school, first of all, there's not enough private schools for them to go to. But then second of all, what's left in our public schools? I just think that we can do better in our public schools rather than say, let's just shut them all down and have kids go to a private school or to a charter school or something like that. There's got to be a way, and we can't give up. I feel like we're going to be giving up on some kids because unless you get full rides to those private schools and parents, you know, are still going to have to try to come up with some money, they're not going to be able to fund their way to do it. So I think we're always going to need good public schools. There's got to be a way to do that. This is not an unsolvable problem. It's just not an easy one. 552, Steve Hallstrom Show. A short break for us. When we come back on the program, get a couple of text messages that have come in that I want to get into before we finish up here. Steve Hallstrom Show, wrapping it up on a Friday right after this. All right, I thought this was interesting. Steve, there's a lot of talk about the Department of Education and disbanding that. But when you think about it, our tax structure is just as mean-spirited to Americans. We get taxed when we earn it. We get taxed when we spend it. We get taxed when we save it. We get taxed when we die. It needs to end. The IRS should be next. Yeah, you know, I don't know that the IRS is the problem. If you want to get rid of the tax problem, you got to get rid of Congress, I think, or your local schools and cities. The IRS is the obviously the agency that's, you know, enforcing that and making you pay your federal taxes at least. But taxes is just a function of people locally spending money. So if you're mad at your tax level, that's not the IRS. I think that's your local school board and your county commission, your city council, maybe your state, depending on where you live. Certainly in Minnesota, it's a different kind of story as well. All right, I've got Eagles 24, Chiefs 23. I think this is going to be a great Super Bowl. I cannot wait. I think the Eagles are a little better team. I know that the Chiefs have Pat Mahomes, but I got the Eagles. I think it'll be a lot of fun. Have a great weekend, my friend. See you back here Monday. Have a great night. Keep on flying that flag.